I'm gonna guess that you were read to as a kid.
Not a lot,
Really?
actually. I mean, we listen occasionally, and it was always very special when it happened. And usually, we had this 11 by 17 poster of Rudyard Kipling's If that every so often my mother would read to us three boys as sort of a vaguely colonial be a better person. If you can keep your head while all about you others are losing theirs, dot dot dot, you'll be a man, my son. And I mean, bedtime story is it comes out of that, you'll be a man, my son, because it's about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a father. But no, I wasn't read to a lot as a kid. Xander is read to a lot. It's not me doing it, which is interesting with given the importance of the father-son bedtime ritual and bedtime story, but it's actually Corey who does the bedtime reading in our house.
I'm trying to figure out how to explain the plot without giving too much away and yet give people a sense of the story because they're and it's difficult because there are two frames. So how have you figured out a way of saying it?
Bedtime Story is a novel about fathers and sons, and it focuses on the moment where a child starts to drift away from the family, which is an inevitable moment. The main characters are Chris, who's the father, who's a writer in his mid-30s, and his son David, who, as the novel opens, is 11. And Chris, for David's 11th birthday, gives him a book that is from an author he treasured as a child. And the book, David gets lost in the book, at first metaphorically, in the way that readers, especially at that age, get lost in books, and then literally, as the book does something to him and takes him away.
It's kind of in a coma.
He's not in a coma.
But sort of.
Dude, he's in a catatonic state. It's very important for me. Before I Wake was about a coma. This is about catatonia, and it's not medical, it's magical. Xander is a fun kid. Xander is 11. And, for the last couple of years, I've been working on this, and he will occasionally bring up, "So, you're gonna write another book about a kid in a coma?" And I'll say, "You know, David's not in a coma." And he'll stop and he'll look at me with the most disparaging look, and he'll do air quotes, "No, he's catatonic." Insufferable little brat. But yeah, and David is drawn physically into the story that he's been reading and that the reader's been reading along with him. And as he tries to free himself from the story, Chris tries to save his son from the book that he's given him.
Chris, the father, has been a successful one-time author, and
I don't
then
know where you're going with this.
he says with a sly grin. Yeah, okay, well, you know, so let's get that part out.
Chris, I didn't realize Chris is not me. I mean, I don't write that sort of autobiographical fiction because I think it's pretty boring. Chris is clearly, though, written out of what I know. I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm a firm believer that write what you know is bullshit, and it's the sort of creative writing lesson that produces absolutely god-awful writers. Generally speaking, I'm sure there are exceptions, he said politically. But I think it's because people misunderstand. Write What You Know isn't about writing the events of your life, because let's face it, everybody's life is pretty boring. And nobody cares. Nobody cares that you're in love except you. Nobody cares that your heart's broken except you. So writing about it can be therapeutic, but don't expect other people to take to it. What you need to do is write out of what you know. You need to take that falling in love or that heartbreak and push it onto something else and make it resonate for other people. And that means getting out of yourself. Don't write what you know, write out of what you know. So Chris is obviously written out of what I know. Like I know the feeling of having a late second book, and I know the feeling of that distance that can develop between a father and a son. And I know I mean, anybody who's been married knows that marriage isn't easy. But pushing it out, I mean, Chris is not me. I mean, Chris's book is way late, and Chris is never going to publish that book. Chris is never going to finish that book. I finished this one, so take that autobiographical intent.
It's a delight to read something that is written from someone who obviously loves books.
Well, thank you. I love stories. I don't always.
Maybe I should have said story. I probably should have said stories.
Yeah, because this, of all things, and it's from the title on down, it's a celebration of the power of story. And the power of story to bring people together and to tear people apart and to bring life and to threaten life. I mean, this is, stories are powerful things, and stories are all we have. We as a species are narrative driven. We're the only species in the world that's narrative driven. And it's how we shape our relationships, and it's how we shape our work lives, and it's how we shape our psyches. I mean, there's a whole therapeutic school with narrative therapy, because the stories that we tell are the way we experience the world. Everything is refracted through story. And what we know of ourselves is our own story. It's what we tell ourselves. What we know of our families is a narrative. And if you change the narrative, you change your life. If you change the narrative, you change the world. Story is utterly primal.
The book is Bedtime Story. I've been speaking with the author Robert J. Wiersma, and Bedtime Story, published by Random House of Canada.